Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, Dilly Ho, you little silly whippersnappers. It's your boy, Kevin Goatee. Guess what? Here we are, back again. Well, another episode, and I'm all tan. Look at me. I look gorgeous. Oh, wait, you're probably listening to me, as our demographics say that most of you are listeners, not viewers. Who cares? As long as you're taking this great podcast, Maura Quint joins us this week to explain why Fargo should be thrown in the wood chipper. Lazy pun, but you know what? I'm tired. I just got back from vacation, all right? So cut me some slack. Kevin Israel, Mr. Reliable, love him to death. He's going to sit on as co-host yet again. Can't get enough of that fella. And we're going to find out if Moore is right or wrong by thinking Fargo is overrated.
Gather around, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go.
I need a favor. Wow, I didn't know we'd become such good friends, because if we had, you'd know that I give head before I give favors. And I don't even give my best friends head, so your chances of getting a favor are pretty fucking slim. Kevin Israel, name that film. Do you want a hint? It's a little off the beaten path, that quote.
But yeah, I'm going to need it doesn't even ring a bell.
Late 90s.
Oh, I mean.
Late 90s. Comedy / drama. I say that with at the end of that.
It sounds like something that would come out of like Chasing Amy or something, but that's not late 90s. So I have no
Maura Quint is our guest. Maura, any idea what that film is from? I admit it is definitely a little off the beaten path, but any idea what that's from?
Well, you narrowed it down so much. I think there were only three or four films that happened in the late 90s. So yeah. Like, you know, it's got to be one of them.
It's not The Matrix.
Oh, well, shit, I'm out. I'm out then.
I've never seen it.
What? Ooh. I would have known. Kevin Israel, that's bullshit because you love, this is a 90s film. I love it, and I'm shocked.
Never saw it. Never saw it.
The film is Go, yep. Maura Quint.
That's about
it's a bunch of separate stories that all link together. Yeah, never saw it.
Katie Holmes in her prime. Oh, yeah.
Holmes, right around with like Lola Rent too. Like those two both kind of had.
Run, Lola, Run.
I'm very pretentious. I'm giving you.
I love Run, Lola, Run. It's fantastic.
Yeah, those
it's
two. Good. I don't know. They always go together in my head.
And Timothy Olyphant is a fantastic bad guy in this. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel sitting in yet again on Baby Watch. We are back yet again. Maura Quint. Hey, how are you? Thanks for joining and hanging out with us tonight. How goes it over there in PA?
It's all right. It's looking like it's going to storm here, but that's okay. We're prepared for that sort of thing around these parts.
Speaking of storm, Moore has chosen a film that has a storm in it or two. That film is the beloved 1996's Fargo, a budget at the time of $7 million, a box office haul of $60 million. Turn that into 2023 money, $13.6 million budget. $116.9 million ROI.
All right.
Not too shabby. Did okay.
You betcha. Ha! Here we go.
Getting us started.
Mm. IMDb, 1 through 10 with decimal points. Maura, what do you think that Fargo has for the old IMDb-er?
people love this movie. So, I mean, and it, like, critics loved it. People who saw it love it. It's got to be pretty high up there. I mean, it's probably like a 8.89, something like that.
8.9, Kevin Israel.
I'm going to go 9 flat.
8.1.
Oh.
Not bad. You're farting around it. How about we go to Rotten Tomatoes, folks? The critics. What did the critics give Fargo?
I know the critics loved this. I'm going to go 92.
Mora.
I think it was higher. I'm going to go 96.
You both are just two flies or moths around the flame circling. 94.
Oh, all right. All right. Mm-hmm. I'll take it.
Back to you, Mora. What did the audience give Fargo?
Oh, gosh. Now I'm all.
Nope, she froze.
At least it's not a terrible face she's making. Sometimes it's like a really bad where you're like, you look like you're having an orgasm.
Yeah, I was just going to say she's like the Bukkake. Mora, you froze. Yeah, can you hear? Oh, poop. Yeah. In the middle of like a fart.
I was on a conference call recently with like a new client, and you know, it's a real serious, like we're trying to convince them, and they're the CEO of the company froze, and he had like one eye open and it looked like he had a googly eye and I was sitting there and I was like, just don't laugh. And somebody goes, well, that's unfortunate.
Mora, what do you think the audience scored for Fargo on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh boy. All right. The audience tends to like things more than the critics. You said 94. I'll say 95 for the audience.
95. Kevin Israel.
88.
92.
Wow. Really? Jeez.
Yeah. This was pretty well revered top to bottom quotes. Oh yeah. And of course, the aforementioned, you betcha. Other than that, I have nothing quotes. This film, not quotable. Mora, any quotes jump out at you?
I mean, they say Margie about a million times. So just saying Margie or really, I think if you try to speak in a Minnesota, like a northern Minnesotan accent, it doesn't matter what you're saying. That counts as a Fargo quote. You could say anything. You could quote other movies in that accent. And now it's a Fargo quote.
You got me thinking now. Can you imagine calling out the name Margie in the throes of passion? I sure couldn't. Yeah.
Homer could.
Oh, yeah. That's Marge. Margie. That's up there with like, it's got to be like Ethel, Brenda, any other Dorothy, Dorothea. Those names, if I ever met a woman, I go, I can't do this. I'm sorry.
You know, you don't have to say their name. You can say other things. Like we've invented a whole host of other vocabulary for this. I'm just letting you know in case like you're in that situation and, you know, you don't, it doesn't have to be.
Sugar tits doesn't miss either. That's
always a good one. Always works. Never a problem. Never going to get you canceled.
Kevin Israel, in the bedroom, it better not. Kevin Israel, how about you? Quotes?
I mean, you know, there wasn't a lot of Fargo quoting going on around my fraternity house when
No, mine either.
We checked out the numbers and it's a pretty sweet deal.
Oh, yeah. They did say that a lot. 5 fun facts. Despite the title, only the opening scene where Jerry meets Carl and Geyer to reveal the plan to kidnap his wife and hold her for ransom takes place in Fargo. Most of the movie takes place in either Brainerd or the Twin Cities area. Brainerd.
That is very fun. That's so fun.
Spelled like Brainerd. Yeah. In 2001, several media outlets falsely reported that Takako Konishi has trekked from Tokyo to Bismarck and Fargo in search of the fictitious money hidden by Steve Buscemi's character, Carl Showalter, and froze in the cold. Can you imagine someone actually goes out for that kind of quest? Hey, while we're at it, Kevin Israel, why don't we go look to see if we can find One-Eyed Willie's treasure from Goonies and see if that...
And the dead man's chest, where's that at?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you guys should record this. This sounds like a great episode. Definitely go treasure hunting.
Maybe the Grail and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. We have to go travel to the Canyon of the Crescent Moon. That's where we have to go start. Fargo received some understandable backlash from Minnesotans and North Dakotans for portraying their neck of the American woods as being simple, funny talking folks. Indeed, the movie's commentary, native Minnesotan Joel Cohen, referred to the state as Siberia with family restaurants. Sounds like a lot of Shoney's and Steak and Shakes are happening up there.
Perkins. Don't leave out of Perkins.
Perkins. That's good. Good call. Perkins.
Yep. Guess the money didn't get any funding from the state.
Yeah.
Quote, but now they use it as a travel film. Yeah.
Come to Fargo, where it was never filmed.
Right.
Some see the wood chipper.
It's a movie that people who don't live here seem to enjoy, but for us, it's a little bit of an embarrassment.
That makes sense to me. I got a lot to say on that.
Yeah, only a few minutes. I copy and pasted the same damn one twice. Whoops. More fun facts. By the way,
the fifth fact is you were disorganized.
I will actually insert this. It was so easy because I read this. I go, it's not that fun of a fact. But now, in a pinch, here we go. It was easy to get Frances McDormand to play the role of Margie. You know why? Because she's married to one of the Coen brothers.
Yeah, that is fun. That's why she's in most of their. Well, that's not why she's in. What a terribly sexist thing I was saying. She's deeply talented of her own rights. But I would imagine she gets some top consideration.
The role of Carl Showalter was written specifically for Steve Buscemi, to which I ask, what the hell would you have done if he said, I'm sorry, I'm too busy doing another Tarantino film right now?
That's when you get Malkovich in there.
Whoa! What a quick reaction and a fantastic answer. I love that, MQ. That's solid. Let's go to the fans, as we call them, the herd. They have questions for you. Ask a gutter. At Joe Loves Cam, Joe Doherty, Fargo became a TV show. What is your favorite movie that became a TV show? And he gives a caveat. It can be a reimagining or in the same universe. Favorite movie. That became a TV show.
It's very, well, see, that's tricky, actually. That wording is tricky, because then I don't have to necessarily like the TV show, huh? Like, the movie just had to have, because, for instance, Clueless is a great movie. It became a TV show. I love Clueless. Clueless is fantastic. I'll go with that, but okay. I don't care about the TV show. Yeah, I'm going to stick with that.
Fair. Kevin Israel, have you a thought?
I guess I would have to go with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Because I think that's the only show. I was a Buffy fan, so I guess that. But and I thought the show was better than the movie, but
I never saw the movie, so that's where I
can't think of the movie. The movie was very 90s, and I do love all things 90s, but it wasn't a very good movie.
I never saw the TV show, and I watched the movie way after the fact to go, well, Christy Swanson, she is delicious, but this film, people love it. I don't get it. I don't have a film, a TV show that became a or movie that became a TV show that I like, because when you one generation removed, I think it always sucks. There wasn't any that jumped out at me. I mean, there are a lot of TV shows that became movies that were pretty badass. What do you got?
I just looked up a list because I was like, how many times has this been done? You know what's a good one? The Equalizer.
Oh, wow. And the movies was the third one's coming out. The first movie is great. The
first one's fantastic.
Second one's at third.
But
one,
it's still Denzel kicking ass. So you know,
I will watch the third on Netflix.
I also enjoy Cobra Kai. Like, I've liked that TV show. Okay. I don't really care too much about The Karate Kid, though. So it's like, it's fine. But Cobra Kai is fun.
Cobra Kai, I can't watch anymore. It's just too goddamn ridiculous with all the shenanigans.
It absolutely is. Yeah. You have to watch it from that kind of absurd mindset.
Like, but it's gone too.
It's of way TV shows where I'm like, I would like to have a drink cliff. And just be like, all right, this is goofy as hell, and I'm just going to turn my brain off and laugh at like nothing.
I think during the last season, I look at my wife and I just pause and go, enough.
I didn't even watch.
The first two or three seasons, they're like, all right, I'm with it. The first season was gangbusters, but the rest has been hot horse shit. Next, at Namorovsky, is the Minnesota North Dakota accent the least sexy accent in all of America? If not, which accent has dried more panties?
That's a tricky one. I mean, like, I think that might be the case, but at this point there's like a certain type of southern drawl that I just hear, and like I just can feel my rights being taken away from me, so it's like that one kind of turns me off.
I have very distinct answers. The answers
I know what you're gonna say.
The answers are easy. The first one is Boston without question. The second one is Philadelphia. God, you're right about the
litter.
Litter, yeah.
I'm going to go home and go on the phone and have some chocolate and then have a hoagie and drink some milk.
That's because you guys are too close to it, I think. But without having the state pride, like, it's ridiculous, but it's our ridiculous, and I love it.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're the one that does that. Next one. of course, the Alabama horrible Southern. I mean, the Texas drawl is more charming than like an Alabama Mississippi one.
I think the Southern accents are typically more attractive on women than they are on men, because it comes off like cute on a woman. On a guy, it just makes him sound stupid.
Right. Like, the yokel from Simpsons. And here's one. This is going to hit you more. I'm sorry. This, I had no idea where you're from. The Pittsburgh Yinzer accent is also terrible.
You don't want to go downtown?
No. No. I don't want to have a pop either. I don't want to have
anywhere in the Midwest.
A grinder or a Yinzer. Yeah. Yinzer. Oh,
Yinzers. I love the Yinzers too. I mean, again, just, you know, it's family. I can't hate these groups.
I mean, you could, never mind. Too easy. Not going to say it. You're a nice person.
You're nice. I love that you still think that. That's wonderful.
We'll get there. Mm-hmm. At Lord Snurts with his predictions, I will give them at the end of the podcast, of course, not to influence ours. You're driving through North Dakota. During the side of a road piss break, you discover the case of money that Carl buried. What do you do?
I look around for any wood chippers first and foremost. I mean, like, I'm, you know, assess the area. I think I leave that there, though. That seems like a cursed amount of money. I think that stays. I feel like it would just, if I carried that home with me, I would be carrying all sorts of things I did not want to invite. A lot of real stupidity.
I would look for a tracker in that because I've watched too many movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then once I did not find a tracker, I'd finish up my piss, of course. Then I would lug that back in the car and never pay to never have to go through Minnesota or North Dakota again. Israel, an answer from you?
I would love to say that I would do the same, but I think when I'm really pressed, to be honest, I'd probably call the police. Because after seeing No Country for Old Men, another Coen Brothers movie, it's just like taking found money is just a bad idea. You never know the blood that's attached to it. I think I'd have to call, because I'd spend my whole life looking over my shoulder waiting for somebody to be like, where's the money?
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. That makes total sense to me.
I have picked up many dollar bills, and one I sent by like 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20. I go, holy shit. And then I found the guy's wallet. I go,
I mean, a dollar bill, 5, 10, even 20, fine. You find a case with $1 million. Something went on. Like, that's not, even at least if it was in a bank bag, I would be like, oh, it fell off of a bank truck. There's no murder.
That would be like, no problem. You just instantly go there. Like, but
at least it'd be like, there's no blood probably.
Freeway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would be looking for those, making sure there weren't any dye packs in there or tracers. Again, I watched too many films. That shit's staying with me on.
I was actually waiting for that when he was going through the money. I was like, there's definitely a dye pack in.
See, I'm on the same wavelength. Next one.
But my head goes into like horror film. Like, I would assume I was inviting in some sort of cursed spirit, like something, somebody died with that and now they're haunting the money. And then, oh, like I've opened some sort of portal
of that.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Wary of portals in general. Like, I don't want to open those.
Yeah. The only curse, the only curse I have to worry about is the IRS finding out I found this money. That's the only curse I have to worry about.
Yeah. Right. Right.
That's it. Guess what? It's in the house. It's locked up in the safe. Last one from Heywood. You blow me. Does anyone else think the guy playing opposite Buscemi looked like a fucked up Bruce Willis? It bothered the shit out of me the first time I saw Fargo. And then, of course, they cut and paste pictures of Bruce Willis from The Fifth Element.
Yeah, I couldn't help but comment on that one.
I knew you. That was on cable. I was flipping around eating dinner tonight, too. I thought of you. Any thoughts on that?
I was just saying, no, it does. It looks like if he actually got as beat up as he was supposed to get in Die Hard, this is what he would come out looking like.
And that's going to close Ask a Gutter. Maura, no one listens to the end of the podcast. We give our plugs out in the beginning. Maura Quint, what are you up to? Where can we find you?
That's such a good question, because I've got nothing going on right now. So, you know, you can just basically find me anywhere online. I'm haunting all the social media sites as Maura Quint. And then I am doing my work at Americans for Tax Fairness. So you can go there if you're interested in progressive tax policy. But otherwise, if you want the jokes, it's just me trying to figure out social media sites for the minute while I figure out a way to be creative going forward. I'm sure that'll happen eventually.
Can you make a hell of a joke about a 1040 form, and then a 1040 walks in a bar and makes a W-9, and then what do you know, a W-2 pops out 9 months later?
Wow, that's good. You had that right there, ready to go.
Yeah, wow.
That was off the dome, wasn't it? Hey, you know, I've got a little experience in this. Kevin Israel, I want to hear what you're up to.
I'm waiting for a baby. My comedy calendar is utterly dead right now because I'm taking September and October off, as my daughter will be born any minute. So that's where we are.
Wait a second. Is your wife a pregnant cop? Like, is Fargo somehow based
on her? She's out there
that...
right now puking in the ice, actually, as it happens.
Amazing. Yeah. This is strange, so topical. Coincidence. Yeah.
And by the way, he made her eggs at 4 a.m. today, too, by the way. What a doting husband. Of course, guttingthesacredcow.com for all your t-shirt needs, hats, mugs, whatever you want to find there. Guttingthesacredcow at gmail.com to advertise with us. And for the love of Pete, leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review wherever you hear finer of podcasts. And lastly, no better compliment than a referral, because when all you folks tell your friends, excuse me, what a funny ass show this is and why it's the best movie review, the movie debate podcast, whatever you want to call it out there. Well, hell, it helps us. It puts a smile on our face. Ear to ear, baby. Hi, Kevin Israel. I think it's time that we let Maura strap on the old snowshoes, go out there and see if her can go out there and throw Margie in the old wood chipper and
got
sacred
cow.
It was beautiful.
All right. I can dive in here. Here we go, Fargo. I did not like Fargo right from the start when I first saw it, but I think partially, I will say right up front, it was immediately hyped up to me. Like, everyone just was just going on and on about how great Fargo was. So I think, you know, if I had seen it in different circumstances, you know, if I was like the first person to see this film somewhere, maybe I would have been a little bit more open to it. But like, just hearing the sort of gushing nature of it probably made me go in a little bit wary. But I watched it again. Of course, I had to. I'm a good podcast guest. I watched this film more than once just for you guys, which I don't think I've ever done for anyone before. Wow. So yeah,
you watched this twice in preparation?
I did. I watched
that's
it twice.
Never happened before.
That's, no, it has not. That is dedication, more.
Yeah. I watched it twice because I wanted to be fully prepared. Look, I enjoy depressed Ansel Adams imagery as much as the next person, but like, first of all, have most of the people watching this never known that you could just like get a picture of black and white picture of snow and just hang it on your wall? Like, you don't have to watch this movie for that experience, because I imagine that's primarily what people are taking away. They're going, oh, look, it's pretty and it's snowy and I like living in this sort of like, you can just post that on your walls at any point in time. You don't actually have to watch this film, but I assume that most people are watching it just to like sort of see how long William H. Macy can keep this accent up, or like any, like waiting for them to break. It's just sort of like an enjoyment. But again, is that really worth like an hour and 40 minutes? I mean, like, it's a fun 2-minute sketch, but is that an hour and 40 minutes? Plus, everything I read on it says, oh, it's a dark comedy.
I address that too.
Yeah. Like, okay, sure. I think the word comedy is still in there, right? Like, it's like, you still are supposed to, here's how seriously I took this. I looked up dark comedy because I'm like, maybe I don't understand what a dark comedy is. Maybe all this time I've been misinterpreting what dark humor is, because I still thought it was supposed to be funny. No, it is still supposed to be funny. It is right there with gallows humor. I'm not sure where the laughs are in Fargo outside of, ha ha, look at these stupid people's accent. Isn't it funny to laugh at their voices and the way they speak? Which, like, now we already talked about it. You know, I'm in Pennsylvania. I've got Philadelphia and Pittsburgh right here. Maybe I have a little bit of sensitivity around, like, let's not just get our enjoyment from mocking someone else's accent. Like, it can be cute or fun for a minute or two, but like, is that it? That's the whole of the humor that you're going to sustain, is that they go, you betcha. And like, oh yeah. And they go up at the end of their speech. Like, that's it. That's for 2 hours. That's it.
May I read you a list of what Google thinks are popular dark comedies? I will give you a few. Okay. American Psycho.
That's fair.
Is it a funny film though?
There's enough parts in it that I've referenced that I would say it's a dark comedy.
Okay. I haven't watched it in a while. I liked it. Don't remember.
Don't just
laughing.
Stare at it. Eat it.
Yeah.
See, you laughed.
Knives Out is the next one. Laughing? No. That's a whodunit, not a dark comedy.
Yeah.
Inglourious Basterds, definitely not a dark comedy. I'm not going to let anyone do that. Game Nights, never saw it, won't comment.
Yes, that's a comedy. I don't know how dark, it's dark at the end, but I don't think it's a dark comedy.
Jojo Rabbit, satirical.
Yeah, it's not a comedy.
Yeah.
And not funny either. It's definitely not a comedy. Parasite, also listed as a dark comedy. Didn't laugh once, enjoyed the shit out of it though.
Great movie. Yeah, not comedy.
Would not call that a dark comedy, no.
No, I will give you The Menu. Not laughing either at that one.
No, that wasn't funny at all.
No.
Maybe people just don't understand words. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah. Burn
Did
After
AI
Reading?
Write this?
Yeah, right.
I never saw it.
I haven't either. And they also call The Wolf of Wall Street a dark comedy, which it is not. Not one bit. Not in the least.
No, not in any
It is a bio. It's a biopic, I would declare that as.
It's some pretty fucking funny parts, though.
It's funny as hell, and I love it, but it's not a dark comedy. Sorry, Maura, I wanted to do
No, it's fine. I mean, I looked up like dark humor and stuff, and it was all out of Gallows Humor. I like wrote down, they were giving lots of lists of like the origins of it, and mm-hmm. one of them was this murderer whose name was James French. He was getting killed by electric chair, and he was talking to a reporter before he was executed, and leaned over to the reporter and said, if I were covering my execution, you know what I'd say in the headline, the newspaper headline? French fries. See ya. That's what he said. French fries. See ya. I'm like, all right, I get it. You know, give me a good pun in there.
It's a joke. Sure.
It's a joke.
All right. I chuckle.
All right. You know, exactly. So I think that like primarily what we're supposed to laugh at is the Minnesota accent, which that's a little, I'm not sure about that entirely, but also I really do feel like it's just such an ambient movie and people really enjoy this sort of like snowbound captured thing, which I would get if I watched it in the middle of August and the air conditioning was out. Then I'd be like, this is an amazing movie. I feel cold. This is great. But like, I don't think that all of the audience was just like menopausal women having heat flashes. Like, I assume that there was something else. But that would make sense to me because I enjoy that. It's a very, very pretty movie about the cold. But I've heard so many people be like, oh, the Coen brothers, they really understand Minnesota. They get it. They nailed Minnesota, which is infuriating to me because, as you mentioned, the movie's called Fargo, which is in North Dakota. It's not even in Minnesota. I understand that most of the movie takes place there, but also, fuck you. You're naming your movie something from a completely different state than is the one that you're pretending to capture. That annoys me, but whatever. That's a little aside. But I'm also instantly angry at this movie because of the way it opens. The way it opens is that fun thing coming up on the screen saying, this is a true story. The events depicted in this film took place in Minnesota in 1987 at the request of the survivors. The names have been changed. Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred. This is bullshit. It is not a true story. They fucking just made it up and it makes me crazy.
And sounds like someone didn't like Blair Witch Project as well.
I'm gonna rant for a second here.
Wait, what? Wait.
There's not been any ranting yet, but go stand in the corner with your nose. It's fine. just pointing in. I'll be over.
Also done in this very podcast.
That makes sense to me. Different thoughts about that one. But anyway, like we know that this is not a true story. It's not based in any true story. But I think at this point in time, we know that people will sit down and watch absolutely any fucking drivel if you say that it is a true crime thing, right? Like entire podcasts and fortunes have been made off of just going, hey, let's talk about some murders that really happened. You can sacrifice anything. Like people's attentions are instantly in. You don't need a story. You don't need character development. You don't need plot. You don't need anything really. Not really. You just need to like, let's talk through these murders that happened. And people are invested because the moment you say it's a true story, they hear, oh shit, what would I do? This could happen to me. Like they center themselves. They become the main character, right? Like it becomes an internalized, personalized moment of, wow, what if that happened to me? What if someone came up behind me and tried to push me down the stairs? What if I married a guy who paid someone to have me kidnapped? And then I had to like run with a bag over my head in the middle of like the northern wilderness away from like psychopaths. What would I have done in that circumstance? Because it becomes like possible. It becomes in the world instantly of the real. And I think that is a complete cheat. Like, I think that you are setting it up to force people to be invested beyond just making a movie. And I think that that's like, it's like, people were calling that genius. I find it just manipulative. Like, I think that, you know, if you're going to make a movie and make a story in the, I like the Coen brothers too. Like, I will say up front, I like them. I like many of their films very, very much. And I hate this film, but I do hate this element of it. I think it is really, really obnoxious and really irritating. And I don't find it genius. I just think it's just playing with people's desire and fascination with death and the worst parts of actual humanity. So that one makes me crazy. It pisses me off. There's just no point to it. It just artificially engages us. I shall keep going.
Please do. Yeah, please do.
Okay. All right. Just making sure.
Yep.
All right. So the other element too is this is a true story thing that, like, we're basing all of this on the real, also demands that we suspend some of our disbelief at the more outrageous, ridiculous parts of this. And that includes that, like, the vocal coach said that she was exaggerating. She was working with these actors to exaggerate this accent. So they're not even like, they're already in this sort of parody world of playing with the idea of Minnesota and what Minnesotans are. And if I were from that area, I'd be really fucking annoyed, because you're not just parodying it. You're saying, no, this is all true. This happened. This is real. This is how it is up there. This is how these people are. Like, it's so much worse than just being like, well, I lived there, and this is like kind of an exaggeration of some part of my experience. You're saying, no, go right now. You'll see exactly the same. All of the people up there are kind of slow, kind of dumb. They're a lot like cows. So many shots in Fargo are just a moment where we have a shot just of someone chewing, just like cow with cud, just like frozen on, just like, just a blank stare in their eyes. Like, I understand that people can be this way, but like, you're depicting almost everyone in this entire region that they are this way. It's like, oh, okay, these are all people who they take their time at the DMV. Like, partially because they don't know how to fill out the forms, and partially because they're just so darn happy to be there. Like, it's just very, it's like the worst idea of humanity in a movie. And you're telling us that we are supposed to actually believe this is fully true of all of these people. Plus, if you're going to tell me that this is an actual depiction of Minnesota and you're not going to show me a hot dish, I know you are bullshit.
I didn't see one casserole, goddammit.
Not a single tater tot casserole. This is like, what the fuck? This is
Wait. I hate to be a one-upper. No, not even one person putting ranch on their pizza. What are we talking about?
I didn't see a single bottle of ranch in the whole movie. Like, this is obviously not a true depiction of the area. It's absurd and insulting. Also, all of our characters, just about all of our characters, they get progressively stupider throughout the movie. And it's fine. Like, it's fun. It can be very fun to have stupid characters and watch them and stuff. But like, these get more and more cartoonish while still maintaining a kind of slow pace to the movie. So it's sort of like, it's like if we watched a Roadrunner cartoon, but we were just like, needs more just bleak, desolate, empty space. And then we'll eventually get to the Roadrunner running off that cliff. But like, let's draw it out for 90 minutes. Like, there's a reason those cartoons are just like 90 seconds long. It's like, that's as long as that premise can sustain. But here we're like, no. We're going to keep this cartoon going, but kind of quietly, like a quiet cartoon. It doesn't really like mesh up that well to me. And we have one character who does not, right? We have one hero who is a good character who is fleshed out both metaphorically and physically as a pregnant woman. We have one character that is our hero. I think that like also part of the humor is supposed to be that she's pregnant, which like maybe that's funny to people who have never experienced pregnancy, but to the rest of us, it's just kind of like, no, you actually do have to do your job until they can see something coming out of you. You are actually still expected to show up for work. Like, that's just, you know, that's just normal in life.
And it's, except for one scene, it really doesn't play into the script. Like, she just gets sick outside on the ice, and that's it. Oh, I'm fine. Okay. But there's never, it's not like she's in a shootout and worried about the baby taking a bullet, or she's running and she gets too winded too fast because the baby's draining all of her energy. It It's she wears a baby bump that, by the way, was filled with bird seed. That's a little fun fact number six. But there's no real payoff for her being pregnant.
No, we don't see her in any way, like even connecting to her pregnancy. Like it doesn't even humanize her in terms of like, oh, she's aware of this child that she's going. There doesn't seem to even really be any awareness of it per se. It's just we made her pregnant, maybe just because that's funnier or something to like juxtapose. I'm not sure. But I mean, you know, okay, great. Having a pregnant character, that's fine for the representation, I suppose, but that's about it. But I will say, and I'm sorry, but you know, it's 2023 and this is where I am. I'm sorry. ACAB includes Fargo. Like, you know, I can no longer sit here and be like, I'm rooting for the cop. I'm just past that now. You know, we have to kill our heroes here. And I just can't do it. So that's my general synopsis of problems. Okay. I've got plenty more, but that's the ranting I will do for you all for now.
All right. So that's good. That's it with the bow tie. You're done with your argument.
I lay down my papers. Yes.
Give me a number 1 to 10, Maura Quint.
Any number? Are we playing a
magic trick? No, we're not playing a guessing game. I'm asking for your score. Yeah, what's your score of Fargo? 1 to 10, please.
Six.
Six.
Five. All right. And a half. Six. Yeah. Well,
all right.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. Kevin Israel, get in that batter's box, son.
I'd never seen Fargo before. And it's one of those movies. No, I'd never seen it. And, you know, everybody talks about it. I knew that all I knew about Fargo was it takes place in Minnesota. And it's funny because I said, I think this takes place in Minnesota. And my wife was like, Fargo's in North Dakota. And I was like, yeah, but for some reason, it's like, I was sure this takes place in Minnesota. And then as soon as it starts and they said, you know, Minnesota, I was like, see, I told you. She's like, but Fargo's in North Dakota. And I was like, this is the kind of argument that ends a marriage. Like, this is how.
She's a very smart woman and I'm fully on her side.
I love how she said it so pejoratively, but you're like, no, Ashley, you're wrong.
Right. So anyhow, so I'd never seen the movie. I just knew that it was in a big Midwestern state. It was cold and there was a murder. That's all I knew about the. I had no idea. And that William H. Macy was in it. That's the only thing I knew about it. I got very excited. I love Peter Stormare. I love him. I love almost everything he does. He's my favorite devil of all time, which I've talked about before. He can do no wrong. And he's usually in little bit parts where he has maybe four or five lines. And they're always the highlight of whatever movie he's in. He's right. Such an odd pick for this movie because he is Russian, I believe, and he does have that accent. And in this movie, has an American accent, I think, and it's not really clear who he or what he is. And other than he's a psycho, you get that.
Yeah.
But the confusion that I felt about him is kind of how I felt about this whole movie. Like, so they dyed his hair blonde, which was something I was going to bring up before the tweet, because I feel like in the 90s when they were like, we need to make somebody different, dye his hair blonde. That'll do it. Like, that's what they did to Bruce Willis in Fifth Element. And it was such a weird choice because he looked so out of place in the whole movie.
And the Jackal. He also did that movie for the Jackal.
Oh, and the right. And the Jackal. Yeah, you're right.
Wait, but at least the blondes are not terrifying? Because I'm pretty sure they're just universally terrifying.
Yeah. Right? Well, right. You hold the goddamn phone, Maura Quint. I take umbrage as a proud blonde member of this establishment.
I'm saying people who are blatantly not blonde, like Peter Stormare in our picture that we have behind us, has dark stubble. He's clearly not a blonde. It was just such a weird thing. The character is weird. Anyway, moving on to the point of the whole movie. I've said this 1,000 times and I'll say it 1,000 more times on this podcast. If I'm lucky enough to be part of 1,000 more episodes, I love character driven stories. I love when they just feed you detail about characters and people and you really get into them. I'll watch great characters sit around and eat a bowl of soup as long as you make them really interesting. And this movie is full of some pretty interesting, kind of dull people. The Coen brothers do a really good job of making dull people seem interesting. And they do that here. And at to Maura's point, just by amplifying this accent, which unless you're from the six states that have that accent, it's ridiculous and outlandish and unsexy. Combine that with the fact that it's in the winter, the freezing winter. Also, winter is very unsexy because you're wearing as many clothes as possible. Combine that with the fact that it was in the late 80s, which was probably the unsexiest time in history. Just looking at it, like, just look at the cars. I'm a car guy. Look at the cars. That every car looked roughly the same, and they all looked like shit. Like every car they're selling, that's it's true. Like, why are they paying $19,000 for that shit box that you could get for $500 today? It's just everything in the movie just looks unattractive and unappealing. But I think that like that gives the movie something that like gives the movie. So I really, really like, and William H. Macy is a great actor, but I really liked his character in this because you feel his desperation as the movie progresses and you can feel the tension as everything's closing in on him. And he does such a good job trying to look calm, but you can feel he's like dying slowly inside. I was sure he was going to kill himself by the end of the movie.
Right.
But
that's interesting.
Maura made a point, and that was going to be kind of the foundation of my whole argument. And I'm actually glad she made it. I went into this movie again, knowing nothing about the movie. I'm stupid. So I read the beginning, the preface, and I was like, oh, this is a true story. Well, that sets up, you were looking at, like Moore said, you look at a story through a completely different lens when you think it's a true story. So I watched it going, this is batshit crazy that this actually happened, but it didn't seem so batshit crazy that it couldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I was able to deal with some of the more tangential plot lines that made no point. Her pregnancy. Why did she have to be pregnant? I assume because the real person was pregnant, and it was just an interesting thing to have that this woman's been out policing while she's very pregnant, and that she's doing all the work while the male cop was just sitting up there drinking his coffee, and she's down on the ground. Look, like I thought, I was like, well, a real person did that. That's fascinating that a real person would do that. The entire thing with the Asian gentleman who was her former classmate. I was like, well, that must have really happened. So that's why we have to see this very strange moment in this person's life. And I have to feel racist because I think it's weird that an Asian guy has a Minnesotan accent. And it felt I mean, I knew you were going to bring that up. That was an easy one. And the whole time I felt like I was watching like two different movies. Like he was talking, but somebody else was talking through his mouth. It just seemed so. But I was like, all right, well, I guess the real person went up with a former classmate who was Asian from Minnesota or that area with that accent. And he hit on her and they had this weird interaction and she was pregnant, but he was still coming on to her, which. Good for you, dude. You're fucking that desperate.
Mm.
So like all of these plot points that seemed kind of pointless seemed so much more important when I thought it was a true movie. And I even said to my wife, I was like, oh, this is true. And she goes, yeah, it's true. And I was like, oh, okay. So like I got reinforcement that this was true. So I was like, all right. And by the way, my wife works in the entertainment business. So anything she says that has anything to do with movies, I just buy. I just immediately buy. The whole
people really believed that, like that's not on her.
It's not like Blair Witch, because obviously that wasn't real, but like it all seemed plausibly real. Mm-hmm. The movie builds up the tension wonderfully, but the problem is once you find out that it's not true, which I found out literally 42 minutes ago before this started, I was like, I should do some extra research. Maura did more work for this than I did. And I Googled and I Facebooked it. I Wikipedia'd it and I find out it's fucking, they lied. Those pieces of shit. I'm already not the biggest Coen Brothers fan of movies. I'll take the Coen Brothers over Wes Anderson every day of the week.
Every day, all day.
But the Coen Brothers still have this way of kind of dragging out boring stories or making things duller that already dull. But I get that that's some people really enjoy that. But once you find out that it's not true, so much of this just loses all of that luster. And all because it could have been such if it's going to be fiction, make it fucking like why was William H. Macy in all of this debt? Like, what did he do to get in all this trouble? I didn't need to know because it's true. So whatever, he's in it. But it's a story you wrote now and we don't know.
Was it to pay off those debts for the cars he was amassing? Was that it?
I think no, because I think the cars those cars that disappeared, one of them was the ones he gave to the guys.
Right.
So maybe that's what it, but they didn't go out of their way to really explain it.
I was just going to say there are a lot of plot points that they do not explain. They just kind of let it be like, what the hell are those two hitmen doing together? Like, why?
That was literally going to be my next point. If you're going to, so you make this fucking guy who's a clear psychopath with some interesting background, this disaster, and they had them that they're fucking those girls in the, why did that happen? Like, that wasn't, I don't understand. Like, it just wasn't necessary. So much of this movie wasn't necessary in getting to the point that was really in the end, it was just like an episode of any other procedural cop show where at the end they're like, we got him. And then they lay back in bed. And it's like, the thing is, at the end of every episode, she and her husband lay back in bed and he had a normal day and she doesn't talk about her crazy day. And that's it. Like, that's really what the movie amounted to. Mm-hmm. Other than just all this other shit they threw in just to be like, you're going to get a lot of Minnesota stuff in this and you're going to feel like you've been in Minnesota. And it's like, I don't know. I didn't hate watching the movie. I enjoyed the performances. I enjoyed the characters. I thought Steve Buscemi is great. I mean, Steve Buscemi is just great in almost everything he does. I really liked him. It's great seeing him young and remembering that, he was always weird looking. and I did love the joke that everybody was like, he's funny looking. I don't know. He's just funny looking. Like that was the hardest I probably laughed in this whole comedy, which just this podcast has taught me. And more, you tied a bow on it that nobody understands what a comedy is anymore. But this is not a comedy in any sense of the word. But it's just I wish I never found out that this wasn't true. I had such a different review going into this before. It's really actually pretty funny because I did have a completely different opinion on this movie until I found out that it wasn't real.
Scores for this now?
Yeah. My score completely changed. And it blew my, because I was like, well, you wouldn't lie about that. Like, why would you set up a movie based on a lie? Like a horror movie, I get why you would do that. You need people to go in with this, like, oh my God, it's real. And we didn't have the money to spend on special effects, so we need to scare you in your head. But there was no reason to lie about this other than it's a cheat, which I think is exactly what you said. And it almost feels like shitty writing. Like we wrote a movie and we were like, this isn't very interesting. What if we say it's true? We tell them it's true. And then people will go, well, that's amazing that happened in a wood chipper. I can't believe that. Of course, I believe somebody wrote that bullshit. Yeah, I could write anything. He could have fucking had him eaten by a dragon. Like, who cares?
Hey, did you know that Thanos actually did snap his fingers and half the world died?
You know what? I'd be more comfortable with all of that. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I was not looking forward to watching this movie because, again, I'm not a big Coen Brothers fan. I didn't hate watching it because the whole time I was going through it, I thought it was real. And then this happened. And I almost wish that I didn't look it up. And then Maura was the one to break it to me that it was. but I was like 20 minutes ahead of you. It's disappointing in a way. But I still didn't hate it. I liked the characters. I liked the tension that they built. I thought, why did I just blank on her name? The cop,
Frances McDormand.
Frances McDormand. She was awesome in this. She did a great job with the accent.
But was she best actress? Good, like she won the award for.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what she was up against.
I can't remember what she was up against.
But that is, I think, sorry, most of it, like, you're watching three incredibly talented actors in particular, like Frances McDormand, Steve Buscemi, William H. Macy, and they're doing the fun accent. Like, sure, that's
I I love William H. Macy. I mean, he's great at being that kind of beat down, sympathetic protagonist. In here, I guess he was kind of the antagonist, actually, but whatever. But yeah, it just I don't know. This was such a weird experience finding out right before that it wasn't real, that it wasn't true, that it ruins everything I wanted to say about this movie. But I'll leave with this. I don't know why anybody would live out there. There you go. I just fucking moved to one of the coasts. It's so much warmer. I don't know why you'd want 7 months of winter or 8 months of winter. That sounds horribly miserable. And the late 80s, everybody dressed terribly and the couches never looked comfortable. But aside from that, this movie was fine. I'll never watch it again. I'm never going to rush out to be like, oh, you know, we got to watch Fargo again. This movie was the definition of a five for me.
To answer your question, the best actresses nominated for that year, obviously Frances McDormand, Brenda Blythen from Secrets and Lies. I don't know who she is. I don't know what that movie is.
Never heard of
Diane Keaton in Marvin's Room. I've heard of it. I've never seen it. Kristen Scott Thomas, English Patient, one film that people keep asking to do on this podcast that I will never acquiesce because no one gives a shit if people take down The English Patient. And Emily Watson, who I don't know who that is, and the movie was Breaking the Waves. I've never heard of that. So
never heard of it. Other than English Patient, I've never heard of any of those movies.
I've heard of Marvin's Room, but to dunk on this is like dunking on five Muggsy Bogues if you're Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah, so then I guess she did deserve best actress for this, I guess.
Five out of Kevin Israel, and Maura Quinn gives it a six. Well, these notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com and guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. And please leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review. At GTSC Podcast. Notes. Not that Steve Buscemi is ever in danger of being confused for Channing Tatum, but Christ, he has aged like seafood covered in milk on a hot July afternoon. He looks like John Leguizamo's Down syndrome brother. Steve Buscemi, oof. He's actually my buddy's neighbor, literally lives across the street from him in Brooklyn. The Minnesota accent is bad, but not cracking the holy trinity of Philly, Boston, or the Deep South. I mean, said that before, but it bears repeating. Thank God we did not hear those hookers call out in ecstasy in that Minnesota accent. Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a spot. You go ahead and pull my hair, won't you? I never got a hooker. Thank you. I never got a hooker. I never got a hooker. Never will. Because I'm good looking. I'm just kidding. Because... Sorry. I can promise you this. If I ever did get a hooker, there would never, ever, ever be TV snuggle time like those two had watching The Tonight Show, for Christ's sakes. If you are on the clock with Kevin Goatee, you are straightening up, doing laundry, or cleaning a bathroom while I am in my refractory period. Not laying there on your ass watching TV.
Refractory period. Everybody listening to this just pause to Google refractory period.
Please do. You'll chuckle even more so when you go, oh, that's what he's talking about. I also introduced Temesin on this podcast. A few people also said that's a nice word. I like a Buscemi and Stormare. I don't even know their names. I'm just going to call them by their actual names. One of them bashes open the back window. But hey, the front door is open. Gotta love those trusting Minnesotans, right? I'm amazed that Peter Stormare goes to the medicine cabinet without any gloves on. I mean, this is 101 shit, fellas.
No, that one killed me.
Like, fastest way to get caught. What a rookie.
Did we not have fingerprints in the 80s? I think we did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When Jerry, that's William H. Macy, calls the police, the TV channel is on static. But his wife was watching a morning show without any problems. Did the kidnappers say, let's fuck up their TV reception as a nice parting gift when taking his wife away?
I had a whole thing I was going to, because if you, oh God, I had the most pretentious line that I could ever like of thought through this. But if you look at the TVs, there is snow on the TVs dependent on the mental state of who is watching them. So the only people who have very clear TV pictures are the wife in the beginning when she's happy and our Frances McDormand character. All of the other characters have some. And then it's snowy, but you still see some picture when the psychopath guy is just like, he's already killed the lady and he doesn't have any, because that to him, that's a clearer mental state, right? This is like, and any movie that I can say this type of thing to that can sound like I just came out of an NYU cinema class, like it loses a point there. It's just like, oh, just shut up. Like, I'm annoyed at myself.
But, oh, that's so meta. You should be writing a critic's 5-star review on Rotten Tomatoes next. yeah. Oh, by the way, why try to pay off the cop? Why not just roll the dice? And if you get a ticket for no tags, move along. Then no one's none the wiser. Look, I know this is a catalyst for a plot point, but I go, oh, come on. We can avoid this. By the way, I liked it better in Pulp Fiction when they shot a guy in the head in a car as opposed to this one. This is very little blood for someone getting their head blown
open.
It looked like
he took the top off of a pot and it just poured out.
Like a champagne bottle was uncorked.
But again, as he starts to get stupider and stupider, his face gets covered with more and more blood throughout the whole movie. I watched it twice in a row, guys. Okay. Like it was.
You keep your meta points and your stupid heathen tongue.
No, I like it. Keep going.
I'm teasing. That's very smart. And I sure shit did not pick up on that. But then again, I didn't watch it twice. So you're better than we are.
Yeah. Both of us.
Yeah. Ah, yes, the old phone, the landline by the bedside that wakes you at 3 a.m. I'm glad those days are long over and those phones can go right to silent. God knows Donna and Greg Goatee sure got their fair share of phone calls late when Kevin was still up around 1:30 in the morning when his friends like, is Kevin there? Guess who bought a second line to their house, Donna and Greg Goatee.
Wow.
Absolutely no chance I'm making my wife eggs at 3 a.m. That is not my DNA and never will be. Honey, there's a protein bar in the fridge on your way out, or just get something at the airport. The oh yeah nonstop would have me selling my home or committing clandestine chemical sterilization by putting saltpeter in the water supply of the city if I ever lived in that town.
Oh yeah.
No, you betcha. The cinematography is fantastic. It is truly
beautiful,
awe-inspiring, great. But like you said, we can green screen snow in there eventually, right? I'm very proud of this line. I've seen more black people on the 1950s Boston Celtics team than I have in this film. But I understand it's an appropriate cross-section of the city's demographic. So don't go nuts, Bechdel people. It's just the way Minnesota is.
Minnesota has a huge African immigrant population,
but not in the not the rural section.
Okay, yeah, I haven't broken it down by city, but yeah.
Kevin Israel, you missed this joke. I'm gonna repeat it because it was so good. I've seen more black people in the 1950s Boston Celtics than I did in this film.
He's been practicing that one. He said it in the mirror a couple of times too, just to make sure he was getting the.
Saw more black people in Jaws.
Even though this came out in '96, I forgot. It was taking place during the 80s. I said, even the fashion and hairstyles for Minnesota are a good decade and a half behind the current times. So, yes, that makes sense. Yeah. The days of hitting a TV to get better reception are as obsolete as a landline next to your bed.
Even I still hit them, though.
Do you really?
It's just ingrained in me. When technology fails, I just hit it. I just go to pummeling. Yeah, I'm very abusive towards technology.
Even as nice as they are in Minnesota. That. I'm having a very hard time ingesting how someone can call you at 2 a.m. just to catch up on old times. How she doesn't have a fuck off out of her mouth after 4.2 seconds. Mind blowing. I spit water out of my mouth when Buscemi stole the license plates in the parking lot airport and saw the parking was $4 a day, $24 to park for the week. It costs $24 an hour to park at Newark Airport. By the way, I love Buscemi opening up on that attendant, charging $4 an hour for 30 seconds for a few minutes. He's so right. Adam Carolla calls it the minimum wage mafia. The people who make minimum wage who have the power to hold up people for their time for money. I was not going, you bet. Yeah, absolutely. Go get him, Steve. Fuck this parking lot attendant guy. The Asian guy with the Minnesota accent is throwing me off like black people with the English Cockney accent.
Jesus.
I keep like looking at my watch. I'm like, am I in the what happened here? Did I just get in a DeLorean? By the way, what was the payoff for him meeting up with her besides, you know, give, you know, dedicating his love for her? It's not like he played an integral part role to the story, except finding out that he's a liar.
Do you want me to keep going with my like film course 101
yes,
stuff?
Yes, do it.
Because
Please do it.
You have to understand, I spent most of high school learning it. Really like practicing how to bullshit through anything. Like, all right, like let's look for the intricate and bullshit. And that one came up. Like, what was the point of that scene? Why the hell is that in there at all? And I got so annoyed that I went and I like started looking up theories. And there's like a whole school of thought on this. Ugh. One of which being that she, well, one of which was just like, yeah, because that then it kind of tricks you more into thinking it's real, like you were saying before. So it's like there's that, because why else would it be there? Who cares? But the other is, hey, you've got this cop who's a good cop. She notices things. But here, you know, she walks in the door. She's fixing her hair. She's like not told her husband that she's meeting this dude. There's like a little something there. And she has this conversation and she doesn't find out until the next day that like, no, he's actually mentally unstable. He's completely made up all of these things. And that is the trigger for her to go, oh, maybe I've been too trustworthy, like too trusting with other people. And now I, maybe when I'm thinking about this case, I should be a little bit more critical of what I'm being told. And then she goes and is able to see that William H. Macy is lying to her.
Now that is a cogent, coherent, loving argument that I am fully behind. I was already say, oh yeah, Maura, try and explain to us why 2001 A Space Odyssey is a good film, because I'm going to call you a liar. And so is Kevin Israel. But no, that makes perfect sense. I would
still,
buy
it. I was actually annoyed. Yeah. I was annoyed when I read it, because I was like really irritated at that whole scene. And then I was like, oh God damn it. That kind of tracks. Fuck you. Okay.
You think when Shep the Indian started whipping Buscemi with a belt, every American Indian in the theater audience got up and cheered? Because of the whole, you know, Manifest Destiny thing we did. Jesus. It's a smart joke, Kevin. Don't Jesus me. It's a smart joke. I'd be so afraid to live in the Midwest or northern states because I don't feel like having a 20-minute conversation when I say hi going outside to get my mail. I know this is a plot point, again, for a catalyst, but the old man, he could have gotten another shot or two off at Buscemi before he got finished off. He had plenty of time to aim and all that. Buscemi was deathly dazed. See, that's that. I shook my head and said, nah, not buying, not buying.
I agree.
I laughed hard when they called Buscemi a, quote, funny looking guy. That's a lot nicer when they would call him over here in Jersey as opposed to calling him a rat faced pygmy with barracuda teeth. The wood chipper scene is a fantastic idea. Never been done before. That is whenever someone says Fargo, that is your go to besides you betcha. That is the quintessential, like, holy shit, like, that was like the calling card for this film. And I love the originality of it.
It has been done since, though.
Well, there it was, a pioneer. What? Give me another one that the wood chipper was.
Deadpool 2. One of the X-Force characters flies into a wood chipper.
Saw that in the theater. I own it. I watched it again. Haven't rewatched it since. By the way, I thought that American Indian guy was Chief from Who One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I Googled. It wasn't.
No, he would have been too. No,
yes,
he,
the age would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get arrested in Minnesota, is it something like this? You're under arrest. Oh, yeah. You have the right to remain silent. You betcha. Anything you say can and will be held against you. Would you like a recipe for the best tuna casserole in the entire world? In summation, the plot moved along. Very memorable characters. When I initially saw it, I said it was fine. Rewatch it for the episode, and guess what? It's fine. Characters are decent. Like I said, good plot and character development. Kevin Israel, you stole the words out of my mouth. I am never going to rewatch this again, ever. People love the Coen brothers. I am 50-50 with them. I hate the Big Lebowski with a burning passion. Raising Arizona stinks on ice. Stop it. Oh, it's terrible.
All right.
You liked it?
I do like Raising Arizona.
Oh, God, it was so boring. This is fine, and No Country for Old Men is good. 6 out of 10.
Ooh.
Kevin, would you get a 5? And you gave it a 6 as well. What did Lord Snurts give? Because Lord Snurts is the perfect guesser.
The prognosticator.
He is. Oh, he's the one who forged this idea. Fargo score predictions. He has me for a 7. He has Kevin Israel for a 7.5. And more, he's got you down for a 4.5. pretty much on pace for you, Maura. He's got me and Kevin Israel a little.
Maura gave it a 6.
Yeah, I went high.
Oh, you do? I'm sorry. I thought you said 5. I'll take that back.
Yeah, I was in the 5-6 range.
Okay. So Snurts, you're a little off on that one, but that's all right. You're still hitting it.
We still love you.
Yeah. Let's go to what you know these guys and gals are given the old metaphorical rub and tug for this film. Critics, 5-star reviews. The spirit of comedy counterbalances the violence of the gangster film and trumps it hands down. Kind ordinariness and the wordy story clash victoriously with the irony of fate that lies in wait for enterprising hearts. I hate that person who wrote that review.
I agree.
Had Morris said it, I would have liked it. But coming from anybody else, it was terrible.
Oh, you might as well just jerk off into a mirror and ceiling fan. Though Miller's Crossing may be one of the best Coen brothers of all time, as poetic as it is absurd, Fargo is the brothers' smartest film and matter-of-fact masterpiece.
Smartest.
Stop it. What's so smart about it?
I don't know. Maybe we're all too dumb. Maybe that's just, maybe they are just that much smarter than we are.
Can I quote Family Guy? It insists upon itself. We just did The Godfather last week, so that was brought up to my recent memory. The Coens' dialogue is snappy and fun, and they know how to ride the line between serious and funny. Their tendency towards moments of horrific violence don't always work for me, but that is one of their signatures, and I can usually get past it.
It's not funny.
Yeah, exactly. No one's walking out of there with tears running down their eyes going, oh my God, I thought I was going to piss my pants. No. A riveting drama of death, dismemberment, small town criminality, and exaggerated accents. All right.
Critics, take away riveting, it's fine.
Yeah. Like,
okay. It is a tale of those things.
Critics, 1-star reviews. In effect, the Coens have written an action film. Action film? Action film?
What?
What? Yeah, compared to Shakespeare, action film.
I don't think you've seen much Shakespeare. There's battle scenes and stuff, you know? All right.
My first go-to is Romeo and Juliet, which really does not.
It's got some stabbing. Lots of stabbing.
A little poisoning, too, but is that action? Oh. Jesus Christ. An action film that disregards the basic principle of the genre. That character is expressed in action. What?
Okay, so they're saying it's meant to be an action film. That's what they wrote, but they didn't actually put much of the action in.
I think maybe a grand total of 13 bullets are fired. That is 15 seconds of an Arnold, not even 15, that's 5 seconds of Arnold in Terminator, any of the Terminator.
You can have plenty of action without guns too, but I didn't see any crescent kicks
from Van Damme like that in this film, did you? No. Or even chase scenes where Tom Cruise with his arms scissoring as fast as possible as he runs across a building? No.
Just at the very end when Kevin found out it wasn't based on a real story. Then it was just kicking and flailing and all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Especially when his wife threw a pill at him when he told her, no, it's in Minnesota. From the camera angles to the set design, everything is calculated to make the viewer feel superior to the cloddish, geeky characters on display.
Okay. Mm.
All right.
Fine. All attitude and low aptitude, its function is to italicize the Coens' giddy contempt toward people who talk and think Minnesotan.
Yeah, I can understand feeling that way.
Would you ever use the term giddy contempt in your daily encounters?
I kind of love it. I might now. Yeah. Giddy contempt. I think that actually summarizes a lot of how I feel a lot of the time.
Sounds like a snarky meta punk band.
Yeah. I would see them. I would go to that show. Yeah.
As long as it's not ska, that's where my line is drawn.
Giddy Contempt is clearly not ska. It doesn't fit the genre.
The danger in portraying characters you consider significantly less interesting than yourself is that too much superiority and not enough affection can lead to a fatal snottiness. Just like that review. Amazon 5-star reviews. This film is a classic and better than the show. You won't be disappointed. Great to watch during snowstorms. Signed, Sam Champion.
I mean, I, was just operating at one very specific level, and good for Sam. It's snowing outside. Let's watch a movie where it snows. Like, all right.
Fargo, cue it up. Next one.
I'm fine with that.
Good movie if you like good police women. I was going to make an Angie Dickinson joke here, but I don't know if that was going to resonate.
Good police women.
Yeah.
I didn't know that a lot of people just had that as their specific category.
That sounds like a bad review for cop porn. Like, oh, exactly. Good police woman.
Yeah.
If this has to be in their Netflix search, and I would demand the authorities be called post haste. If one does not get upset about the F-bomb, you will enjoy this film. It is a bit overused in the place of dialogue. I wonder if the number of awards would have been higher if the screenwriter just tempered his clear fascination with using the F-bomb with such vigor and repetition. It is not really so hard to act if one is just saying it over and over and over again. Well, you get the idea. Other than this annoyance, it is a well-done and acted film. Don't let the little kids watch it unless they already use the F-bomb in normal conversation.
They're fine body and the wood chipper.
That's why the little kids shouldn't watch it, not getting shot in the top of the skull.
Or in a wood chipper.
Look.
Or hookers.
Sometimes you're going to come across some people who have sex with hookers and then get shoved into a wood chipper. As long as they're keeping their language in the nice side, that's fine. But, you know, let's watch our mouths here. Oh, my gosh.
Call me jaded as a Jersey. You know, we are very jaded, and the F word just flows. I don't remember hearing that many F words that would make me go, wait a minute.
No.
This is excessive.
I can't think of one, actually.
because William H. Macy, I mean, he has a bunch of golly gee willikers when he's getting frustrated with the father-in-law trying to get this business deal done, and the business deal being taken from him. He doesn't say like, God damn, fuck you, whatever. It's just, oh, gosh, darn it. You know, oh, I'm so steamed. Like,
yeah, it's a good point.
Just again, maybe because someone from Minnesota. Oh, yeah, that's hilarious. Again, people get so annoyed, but they forget to look at the part where it says R under the rating. I want to clarify some comments that people made below that this movie insinuates Minnesotans. I have lived in Minnesota for many years. This movie is really a Valentine to Minnesota. It has so many in-jokes about Minnesotans beyond the accents, even down to the talk about Honeywell. I guess that's a thermostat company.
Yeah.
The neighbors talk about the weather and the kind of food that Marge eats at the restaurant. It's really quite brilliant putting in all the idiosyncrasies of that area of the country on the film with only a little bit of exaggeration. Yes, some Minnesotans do talk like that. In doing so, it's laughing with Minnesotans rather than at them, and portrays main characters like such as Marge and her husband as loving and kind rather than stupid and shallow. I wonder if Kurt Prince and Kirby Puckett had that Minnesota accent. Sign Jesse Ventura. Okay. Amazon 1-star reviews. Tedious, boring, repetitive, uninspired, and mildly sick. If you ever wanted to watch a movie about average people with above average problems living in an average place with a homicidal maniac running around and a Steve Buscemi whinalogue that just never ends, where everything is mundane and surprise is a word that requires dictionary research to be part of your viewing experience. Except for the average people who are brutally murdered, which is probably a surprise to them, and everyone talks like they're from Fargo, ND, then this movie is for you. That was the longest run-on sentence I've ever read.
Wow, that was... He had some stuff to say.
But there's more. There's more. I hated myself for a while after walking away at the 70-minute mark because I wasted 67 extra minutes after my first suspicion that I'd stumbled upon trash.
He only had like 20 minutes left.
I know. Just see it through. He missed the wood chipper.
The wood chipper.
Violent. Purchased as a movie with a strong female role. My error there. I believe the female role was the police officer. Again, too violent for me. Not what I expected. A guy hires someone to kidnap his wife. Everything goes downhill from there and just keeps going down. Not uplifting. Not motivating. Signed, Rex Harriman, the Long Island serial killer.
It is not uplifting. That is a fair statement.
It's a dark comedy. Kevin Israel, did Maura Quint gut that sacred cow?
I really enjoyed having Maura on the show. I thought you did a great job, and you made all the points that I was going to make. I don't think she got it though. I don't. And mm-hmm. and here's why I don't think you got it. You gave it a six.
I know.
I feel like if you go over five, it's hard for me to support a gutting. Though I agree with all your points. They were cogent. They were well formed. I agree. I mirrored many of them, but I don't think really any of us got it. I think, you know, it's still just floundering around out there that none of us will rewatch, even though you watched it twice. And I'm sorry for that.
You should be. But no, that's entirely fair. I take my lumps.
I think she did. Here's why. Rarely we do. Because she came out here and it's not like she said it sucks. From what I took away from that, she's saying it's overrated. Everyone's putting this on the pedestal of great film, classic. I read the reviews, classic, dark comedy. She's like, no, it's not. It's fine. Saying it's overrated. And her meta arguments were just quite dainty and enjoyable. I'll give her that. But tell you what, Herd, you be the deciding factor.
Yes, go to the Herd.
Democracy rules. Go to at GTSC podcast and you tell us, do you think Maura got the sacred cow? KI says nay. KG says yay. Let's see who's funnier, ChatGPT or KG. By the way, the standings are currently sit at KG 21, Skynet 0. I pulled three jokes. The first three jokes on ChatGPT, asking them the right jokes about Fargo. Here we go. Why did the Minnesotan detective go to the car dealership after watching Fargo? Because he wanted to trade in his for a new You Betcha.
Oh, jeez.
Yikes. That gets a yikes.
Oh, that was as painful as watching those Minnesota hookers fuck. Why did the wood chippers start a therapy group? It had some serious disposal issues to work through after Fargo.
That doesn't even make sense.
Oh, Jesus.
God, they're not even trying. Come on, AI. What the hell? It's going to take our jobs. Do it faster.
Why did the snowman refuse to watch Fargo again? Because every time he saw the wood chipper scene, he'd melt in fear.
AG stands undefeated.
You know the X-Men. This is Colossus skin right here, baby. I am bulletproof. This AI.
Isn't this supposed to be getting better? Isn't AI supposed to be learning and evolving?
Unfortunately, it's getting trained off of like humanities jokes. So right, I don't know. True. Which part
it's gonna get. It's like if they took Terminator, like the bad Terminator in the last film, which they all sucked, the sequels except for two, and they went in backwards order, and now we're back at like just boring ass T-800 Arnold from Terminator 1. Maura Quint, it's been a joy having you on here. Thanks so much for hanging out. We'll see you all next time. Take care.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.